League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
Yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hickson, head of steam, running left. Hickson in for a touchdown. Joe Mixon having a big day here on opening Sunday of the 2024 season.
Texans swarm! 1-0, alone in first place in the AFC South. Good afternoon. It is Gallant and George on Monday, September 9th, 2024. And the Texans took down the Indianapolis Colts yesterday, 29-27. Largely behind Joe Mixon, who had 30 carries for 159 yards and a touchdown. First place in the AFC South. That's good. A win. Also good. And yet. They got lucky yesterday. They got lucky. If they were playing a big boy team, they would have lost yesterday. And while I'm happy they won, and it's great that they got a division win, based off of all the hype that they've gotten this offseason, don't we have to raise our level of expectations? And winning a game by 2 points against a quarterback that is very inaccurate is still a win, but it's going to need to be better if they want to win against the big boys. Because if they played against the big boys, if they played those two teams who played on Thursday night, if they played one of those teams who played last night or on Friday night, they would have lost.
You know, it's funny to think about this game, and from that perspective, Paul, is Anthony Richardson gave you a little bit of everything in this game. Like, he had big boy throws because he's got a cannon. He was just letting those things rip down the field. So you're right, where there is a but to this. You know, there is a, yes, they won, but they could have easily lost this game.
They could have.
And the Mixon, I think, was fitting to start the show with because of all the things that happened in this game. That was the most, I don't know, surprising, pleasant, just awesome to see. But yeah, you're right. They got a little bit lucky in this game. Some bad decisions from the coaching staff. Some weird decisions from the coaching staff throughout this game. So I'm with you. There's definitely a but to this week one victory for the Texans.
I need more. That's all I'm saying. Not poo-pooing it. A win is a win in this league, but we should have no kid gloves on anymore when we're talking about this team. Last year was a lot of fun. We had very low expectations, and they exceeded all of them. But we have higher expectations this year. And against better teams, I think the Texans will lose. I guess the glass half full addition is that you take a look at the AFC South, and it looks like the Texans are the clear front runners as opposed to being a team that will be battling with Indianapolis. But then again, take a look at the final score. Indy did keep that close in a game where Indy couldn't run the football. Texans deserve credit for that. Indy couldn't stop the run. Texans deserve credit for that too. Lots of credit to go around. I'm just saying, this could have been better.
I did walk away impressed with both teams in this game. Like, I thought Indianapolis played a very good game. I was pleasantly, you know, surprised with what you saw from Richardson. The flaws that we knew going into the game showed up. He was inaccurate over the middle. There was just a lot of the simple quarterback stuff that he could not do, but he can be electric at the same time.
He can. He's a great video game player.
Yeah.
But he also has his DJ ukulele moments. And honestly, as a Florida Gator, you should never impersonate some bum-ass Florida State Seminole in the way that he did. Look, Richardson missed a couple of touchdown passes, and that interception that he threw to Kalen Bullock in the red zone, I mean, that was on an overthrow. We can talk all we want about how bad that field was, and it was a terrible field, and how much of a factor it had on the game, but it equally impacted the Texans and the Colts. Anthony Richardson, man, he is very, very inaccurate. Is that going to get better? I don't know. not that much experience playing as a quarterback over these last couple of years, but these are just things that are in the back of my mind. Sorry I'm not coming in here, you know, with the Texans starter jacket on, with some battle red sunglasses, with my helmet on, or any of the costumes. No, this is a business as usual win, and it could have been a better one. I give them a lot of credit for some of the things that they did along the way, but they just got to know in the back of their mind that this was a game that they could have lost. This is not something to be celebrating about. This is one to look at the film, study it intently, and make sure that against Chicago Sunday night, that you've cleaned up a lot of these issues in a game that had some hiccups.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw yesterday in the NFL was that this was the first preseason game of the year. This was the first time that you had really all your guys in action. Of course, you get the false start from Laremy Tunsil. Shocker.
Mm-hmm.
To start early in the game. That's like when you really knew football was back. When they threw the flag and they called it on Laremy. But I think I'm with you 100% on this take, Paul, because the expectations are higher. If you look at the video that that our social media person Sam put together on Friday.
Sam, the social media savant.
Of all of our predictions at the station, every single host and producer that was in the video had 10 or 11 wins, and about half of us had them going to the AFC Championship.
I know. It made me want to walk it back a little bit.
I know.
But I thought this time I was going to be on an island again as the hype man. Nope. And now we're all picking it? Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
I think I was like the first person to record, and I was like, I'm going to be the only one that says this. And then the video started going. I was like, okay, like we're all pretty much in the same boat. But that goes to what you're saying. The expectations have been raised. The expectations that you won is that you were going to win this game. You did it. The expectation on Sunday Night Football is that you're going to win by double digits. You should. The expectation for this team is that when you get to that tough stretch, you know, with the Dolphins, the Ravens, and the Chiefs, is that you're going to win at least two of those games, because that is the expectations that the front office, the players, the fans, the media should all have on this team. So, yes, yesterday was a win as you expected. There are flaws in the game, but there's still so much. There was a lot of positive, for sure.
Yeah, and
100%.
I know. We want to talk about the positive after a victory. Somebody texted in. I believe this is from the 832. Guys, a win is a win. It's a division rival on the road with a payback element attached. Sure, but this is a team that is not standing in the way of you going further than you've ever gone before. Getting to all of those AFC championship game appearance predictions that half of the station had. I mean, Sean's the measured one in the room here. Sean said divisional round and done, like the Texans always
soft.
Are.
Soft. I believe in certain elements of Texans football, and one of those is losing in the divisional round.
If they played like that against a team better than them, yeah, they would have lost. This is not me saying, oh, fire everybody. CJ Stroud's a bum. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you got to raise the level of expectations for this team. And what they did on Sunday, it was a win. And a win is a win, but it could have been better. And if they played against a better team, they would have lost.
It was fitting that we wore suits on Friday. Well, you wore a suit. Joe was in his pajamas at home.
No show, Joe.
That's fake news. I was getting major work done.
Okay, was
major work done.
On a beach somewhere. And,
yeah, drilling my mouth away.
But it was a business-like win for the Texans, where they did what they had to do to win. And I think the biggest positive for me for the Texans, and I agree with you, Paul, that I think a different quarterback, you probably lose this game.
Which is funny because we said that last year, the last game of the year, because yeah, Gardner Minshew was so doo-doo in that Saturday
but
game.
But it's different because yeah, the touchdown pass to Pierce, that might be a situation where I don't know if another player on your schedule can make that throw.
That's true.
Probably,
I mean,
Mahomes.
That was a hell of a ball.
Actually, Mahomes.
Yeah.
But anyone else, like, I'm not sure if you had to worry about that throw,
Josh Allen,
for the rest of the season. But I think that all the intermediate stuff, you probably lose with a more accurate quarterback. But on the flip side, on offense, our biggest question mark for this team was the biggest strength. And that's kind of what really good teams do, is they'll find a, if there needs to be a game where they rush for 5 yards per carry, 30 times a game, they can do that. We all came into the year and came into this game thinking it'll be the wide receivers that make the difference, and they did. They made some big plays themselves, but really what ultimately won them this game was Joe Mixon, of all people.
You mentioned the offensive line and the field. When you watched the game yesterday, Paul, where did you come down on that? Because they weren't great. the offensive line. CJ Stroud got sacked 4 times.
But they were because they ran for 5 yards a carry.
Yes, like they were great running, but they weren't great protecting. It felt like every time we saw it with the incredible play from CJ Stroud in the second quarter where he slipped on the 4th inches or in the 4th quarter and he got the pass to Brevin Jordan. Do you blame the offensive line yesterday, or are you giving some slack to them in Week 1 because of the field?
I'll give them a little bit of slack. I thought the Titus Howard tripping C.J. Stroud sack was entirely a result of that slippy field. But at the same time, yeah, Stroud was under pressure a lot in this game. Now, the Colts have a good front seven. We talked about this on Friday. So this was going to be a challenge. The Texans offensive line checked the box for one of those challenges. I did not think this was possible for them to run 40 times for 213 yards. 5.3 yards a carry. And Joe Mixon, getting 30 carries, did not see that happening in the first game of the year. My Week 1 overreaction for Mixon is, oh, wow, that extension's fine, which is a crazy thing to say because they gave our running back an extension who they gave 30 carries to the first game of the year. I mean, this might not last longer than a year.
That's a situation. I was thinking Anthony Richardson had the game where no matter what you think about him, you think it more. Like, you're more on board with whatever your take on Anthony Richardson is. I think that what you brought up with Joe Mixon's another example of that, where you can view that as either a positive or a negative, that he had 30 rushes for 150 yards, and they signed him to an extension. It's like, ooh, actually, I kind of want to put all these miles on him, then kick him to the curb. Or it's, wow, he can still do it. Vintage Joe Mixon. It is funny that there are both pros and cons with the list of facts of what Joe Mixon did.
I mean, Joe Mixon was arguably one of the best players in the NFL yesterday.
Yeah, he was. I was really impressed. I was impressed. I saw some people when I did my live stream late last night because I'm a master procrastinator. When I did that, some people were saying, this is the same guy who said Joe Mixon wasn't going to do anything going into the year. My defense, not a great one, is, hey, man, the Bengals didn't think he was going to do anything either, and that's a team that went to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. They were going to cut him, and they traded him for a late-round draft pick. So I was wondering, hey, does he still have the same stuff? But he showed a lot of patience, and what I was really impressed by, the physicality. And, I mean, you know, he became infamous for his physicality back in the day. Changed man, better guy now. But very physical in this game, putting a shoulder into people, stiff-arming people. He looked really good.
Part of the physicality I really loved, and this is very stupid, and it doesn't matter, but when you rush for 150 yards, I can also say I love this. I like the no-gloves look. If you're gonna run the ball and you're just going to leave, it adds to the element of physicality is that, hey, listen, our running back's not even going to wear gloves, and we're going to hand it to him 30 times.
I think it also helped that if you noticed towards the end of the game that he had, like, paint marks.
His arms are marked up from that trash-ass field that they're playing.
Dump of a field.
They need to stop playing these games in Indianapolis if they can't guarantee a safe field for the players. I'll just say that.
That's a great point. It's a great point.
We had all the smoke for Brazil. Let's hold ourselves to the same standard.
I'm with you. And people
stop playing in third world countries.
People are
like Indiana.
Dude, here's the thing. It's a great point. I went on a side tangent in my live stream last night into just dumping on Brazil because I actually looked this up after the game because I didn't want to get canceled for it. Brazil is not a first world country. It's not. It's not a first world country. Just saying.
I didn't even know we had like a list.
Is it second?
I looked it up.
I thought it was a you know it when you see it kind of situation.
Is there like a first, second, third power ranking here?
It didn't say what tier they are.
The college football playoff releases the rankings every week.
It didn't say what tier they were.
The AP has said that Brazil is a
low on the coaches poll.
Second tier country.
But to your point about, you know, that field on Friday, you're right. That field yesterday was atrocious. And I mean, what are you doing putting this new field in for Week 1 of the regular season? Why don't you do it in the preseason so you can figure out what's good and what isn't? I don't know. These billionaires, I get it. They're caring about the profits more than they're caring about the product because they know everyone's going to watch the product no matter what. But you're going to get guys getting hurt all year long if that's the kind of field that you're playing on. A field should not be slippery. Just a thought. Anyway, Joe George, Sean Mapes, I'm Paul Gallant. It's Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. Did the Texans get away with one yesterday? And what were you most surprised to see from the Texans yesterday? We haven't touched on this yet. I could not believe that the Texans finally did this yesterday. Stick around. ESPN 97.5, 92.5. And on YouTube at ESPN Houston. And on Twitch at ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
On first and 10, pressure's coming. Richardson slips. Now he's airing it out deep down the field for Pierce. Pierce, touchdown! What a throw by Richardson! A 60-yard touchdown!
That happened a lot yesterday. Ooh. And it's a continuation of something that happened last year. Anthony Richardson, who only completed 9 passes on the game, but still somehow had over 200 yards passing, had a 60-yard touchdown completion. He had a 54-yard completion. And we're not done here, because he had a 54-yard touchdown pass in the fourth quarter. The big play thing, I thought that's why they would address the safety position with the veteran in the offseason. So I'm happy about the victory. I want everybody to know that. I just feel like they got away with one yesterday, and that against a better team, they would have lost. A team with a quarterback who was more accurate, they would have lost. Joe, by my count, Richardson missed 5 throws, and he just flat out missed them. Like, there was no real excuse for it. At least 2 could have been touchdowns.
Yeah, he is. I'm trying to think of the best. Like, what is Anthony Richardson? He is a much better deep thrower version of Justin Fields. I mean, he's a better, probably a just almost as good of a runner. The deep ball is incredible, but the short stuff is a lot to be desired. And also, the second one to Doolin, or whoever the hell that guy was, didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
No idea who he was.
That's a real, I can tell it's week one, because they threw to a guy I've literally never heard
but
of.
But that's a throwback to Colts wide receivers having random names that sound like presidents from the 1800s. There was a guy, I think Chester Rogers was a receiver for the Colts. Right. Alec Pierce sounds
Alec Pierce is an 1800s
Right. They've always had guys like that. And I mean, they were missing one of their top wide receivers yesterday, too, Downs.
Yeah.
But Pittman, you didn't hear much from, but Adonai Mitchell had, I think, multiple moments where he looked really good. Made Derek Stingley or Jimmy Ward, I'm not sure who, look silly a couple of times.
Yeah, does Richardson just never throw to A.D. Mitchell? Because he was consistently off on him. One of the touchdowns that you mentioned that you missed could have been Adonai Mitchell touchdown.
It's like he's overcompensating. Like, he knows how fast he is, so he's trying to throw it a little bit further, thinking he's going to chase it down, but then he's just airmailing the throws.
Yeah. Richardson is it's like if Cam Newton was a worse passer. That's really he is. He's like drunk Cam Newton or something. Like, where it's just everything is a little late, a little behind, or a little forward. He's overcompensating. But, I mean, we saw it on the goal line. Like, physically, like, you can't stop this guy.
Before we get to a couple of things that surprised me that the Texans were able to do today, good things. I'm sorry, I'm sticking with the negative here.
Yeah, come on.
We're raising our expectations. We're raising our standards.
I'm good with this.
Super Bowl standards.
Yeah. That's all we're saying.
Okay. I still have divisional round standards.
And no one said Super Bowl. AFC Championship standards. Okay, one step at a time.
Did everyone have them losing to the Chiefs? I think that's very funny that that's a thing as NFL fans. We're just like, the Chiefs are going to win the AFC.
Well, because you probably look like an idiot if you don't pick them.
Yeah, no. I don't disagree. I mean, I just think it's funny.
Thursday night, I thought the Chiefs played a C-minus game, and I never felt, even though Baltimore had a chance at the very end to tie things up, like, I never took Baltimore very seriously in that one, because Lamar Jackson was playing out of his mind.
Yeah.
Out of his mind.
Yeah.
He's not going to do that again in another game against the Chiefs. But a couple of texts. So, Paul, what team looked so dominant in week one in the AFC that you think the Texans should have lost? It's really about what we just played coming in here. Anthony Richardson had a couple of awesome throws downfield, but he missed just as many. And I really want to know what happens if he doesn't misfire that ball that Kalen Bullock, who is quite the ball hawk, intercepts, because they're in field goal range and they won by 2.
Yeah.
Just think about it from that perspective.
This is what Paul's saying, is raising the standards, is how many quarterbacks would the Texans have lost to? The way the game played out, the league was yesterday, not a ton. Because during the afternoon games, the average quarterback was only throwing for 185 yards. But if you played against Lamar Jackson in week one, if you played against Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, you would have lost.
You're playing against all those guys.
And those are, and that's what raising the standard means. Is that what you're saying? Okay, yes, we could have beaten Bo Nix or Justin Herbert. Or
I don't know about Herbert.
Yeah, Herbert might have just made those.
He wasn't great.
Might have completed those passes.
Herbert makes the cut, I think.
Yeah. Or Justin Fields or Deshaun Bum-ass Watson.
Oh,
like,
God,
yeah.
He stinks.
He really stinks. But when you raise the standard, we're talking about the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. That in this game and how we view the Texans is that Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, we'll see what Aaron Rodgers looks like, Dak Prescott. That is the standard for the Houston Texans now. That you would have lost that game if you played against those teams. I expect the Texans to win by double-digit points this weekend. I expect them to beat Trevor Lawrence and the Jags every time they play them. We're talking about the best teams in the NFL because the Texans want to put themselves in that conversation. So, yes, a majority of the quarterbacks yesterday in the NFL you would have lost because week one was poor play across the league. But if you play that way again, to what Paul's saying, you might not hang on.
Does Baker Mayfield beat you?
Yesterday, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he almost beat him last year, too.
Yes. I mean, that game was literally determined in the last 10
Baker's
seconds.
Fault.
Because Stroud did some incredible things. And we'll talk about Stroud. Stroud was up and down in this game. He did have some brilliant moments. The thing that surprised me most about what the Texans did yesterday, they shut down Jonathan Taylor. The Colts have always had one guy who kicks their ass. It was Peyton Manning at first. It was T.Y. Hilton after Peyton Manning's head fell off. They brought in Andrew Luck. And then it was Jonathan Taylor. But yesterday, the Texans front seven that was missing Christian Harris held Jonathan Taylor to 48 yards on 16 carries, 3 yards per carry. They did a very good job against him. I did not see that coming. I could see, all right, maybe holding him to sub 100 for a change. To hold him to less than 50 and to hold him to 3 yards a carry, that's the biggest victory by the Texans defense yesterday.
You know, it's funny. When I do my notes for football games, I do positive, negative, meh.
Okay.
And I put the run defense in the meh category because even though statistically it looks very good, during the game, I did feel like he was moving the ball in chunks. It was like I saw the box score at the end and I was like, oh, like they held him in check pretty well. But it felt like during game action, he was getting 4 or 5 yards a carry.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
I know they don't. So my feelings are wrong. But that was a good surprise that he didn't just run all over them because it was, you know, without Christian Harris, that was one of the bigger question marks of this team was how was Henry To'o and this group, how were they going to play?
Yeah, To'o played well. I think he led the team in tackles and they look good. On that side of things, the big chunk plays that they continue to give up, I mean, that's frustrating. And I thought Derek Stingley Jr. wasn't his best game as far as being the best corner in the NFL. Like, I know DJ Bieniemy thinks he's capable of being. But the run defense really surprised me. And speaking of those boogeymen, Nico Collins is the first Houston Texans boogeyman for Indianapolis. We've never had one.
Never.
We've never had one. The Colts have owned the Texans more than any franchise in the NFL. They have owned them. And finally, there is somebody here who can kick that fake-ass city's ass. That city that stole a football team away from Baltimore. That city that has shrimp as a delicacy. You're not even on the water! And Nico Collins, over his last 3 games against Indianapolis, 22 catches, 458 yards, 2 touchdowns. And yesterday, it was the same thing. That first play, C.J. Stroud has the shot play downfield to Nico. He underthrew him. That's a touchdown if he actually puts that in a good spot. Since Nico's a huge guy, maybe you don't necessarily need to throw it as far as you can every single time you're throwing it to him. You know he's going to get up there in traffic and get it. There was another play. It was, I think, 3rd and 14. C.J. Stroud rolls to his right. He throws it back across the middle of the field. No one's taking that away from Nico Collins.
That play was great. That was a great play for Nico and C.J.
Yeah.
That was one of those, like, whew. There's not a lot of quarterbacks who should be making that throw. There's a lot of quarterbacks, if they do that, it's a pick six. Like, I trust CJ to make that throw. I want no one else doing it. The catch at the end of the game from Nico.
Yeah, that too. Okay, it's 3rd and 11. And look, Stroud, it's an up-and-down game for Stroud. If we're holding him to higher expectations, to higher standards, there are some things that I want to talk about a little bit later. But my God, I have no idea how he fit in that throw. And this is the difference between where you've been as a franchise for the majority of your history and now. Late in the game, it's 3rd and 11, and you need to keep the other team from getting the ball. How many times would this team have run the football and punted and tried to play defense? This time, they have the balls to go for it on 3rd and 11, and not just go for it. They go to an out route on the short side of the field?
Mm-hmm.
What? And he fits that in? And Nico Collins gets a knee down? I mean, from start to finish, perfection. That play, oh my God.
Yeah.
What a brilliant play. And what balls they showed there because they have this guy under center. But Collins, that play, I mean, they have no answer for him. There was one moment, he catches a pass towards the sideline, and one of the Colts defenders eventually, after he gets the first down, pushes him back and starts jawing with him. Shut up, dude. He is bullying you. He is super atomic wedgying you. The waistband is in your mouth, sir.
Nico is, it's kind of like the Mixon thing. Immediate, like, good vibes on the contract. Immediate good vibes on Nico's new deal.
Yeah.
He is their boogeyman now. He is, I never thought we'd be here. You know, just thinking back to before last year and what it was his first 2 years with the Texans, the way that C.J. Stroud has just opened everything up for Nico Collins and made it work so effortlessly for Nico being this deep target down the field. He can do everything. That's what I love about watching him play is Nico Collins can be effective no matter where you give him the ball. You can give him a screen pass and he can make something out of it. You can give him stuff over the middle, on the sidelines, deep down the field. That's what's so special about him at this point is mm-hmm. you can just trust Nico Collins in any moment, at any point on the field right now, that him and CJ are going to figure it out.
Just go get it. He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Texans took down the Indianapolis Colts 29-27 yesterday. We're going to be talking about it all morning long. And by the way, don't forget, our listener appreciation party is right around the corner. Friday the 20th, right here. There's going to be food from Philly Flats, from BB's, J Bar M. Oh, God, J Bar M. I love that stuff. All sorts of awesome. Food Republic Boot Company is going to do a raffle. You got to go to ESPN975.com under the promotions tab to secure your tickets now and have to be 21 plus to attend because they're running out. And it's tight confines, but we want to see you out there. Coming up next, we continue to talk about this victory and the up and down game that CJ Stroud had. Stick around.
Coming up on the 22nd, Sean, myself, and Brian will be headed to LaBerge Lake Charles to broadcast live from the ESPN Bet Sportsbook there. They will be opening that officially that Friday. They'll do a grand opening ceremony on the 20th, and then we'll be there doing the show that morning, Sunday morning, before the Texans game as they take on whatever, the Vikings, the Patriots, whatever bad team they're playing that Sunday. It's one of the two, unless the real Sam Darnold shows up once again. You never know. But we'll be out there. It's my favorite place to go and bet on my Texas teams when I leave Texas. There's plenty of stuff you can do in the meantime as well. Every week, I'm in the Cover 5 contest. Cover 5 is a free app that you can download. You pick 5 games against the spread. You can do NFL weeks. You can do college football. You can do Major League Baseball. It's a really simple game. If the team you pick covers, you get as many points as they cover by. If they lose, you get negative that. It's an easy game to play. It's totally free. So download the Cover 5 app right now. And when you want to leave Texas and bet on your Texas teams, make sure you do it at LaBerge Lake Charles.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
This marks 9 straight divisional road wins for you guys. There was a little talking back and forth ahead of this division rivalry game. What kind of message did your play send today?
I think it showed that, you know, we accept that the target is on our back. You know, we know that guys can give us our best shot, you know, and it's really all about us. You know, I think if we take away some mistakes and do some better things on offense, especially because our defense played great, you know, I think, like, we have a way better game. But that's a great coach team, very well coached, great defense. But, you know, I definitely think that, like, we can still be better for sure.
Congrats on the win.
Thank you. God bless.
I'm glad he got that God bless in there.
Had to.
Now, I do feel that C.J. Stroud and the Texans should take on, given all the hype attached to them this offseason, more of the Joe Mazzulla approach. And maybe you need to have a championship for this, but for those who don't know, Joe Mazzulla, the crazy head coach of the world champion Boston Celtics, said last week that people have the guns pointed at their face and they're welcoming that. Sean, do we have the audio of that? This is Joe Mazzulla last week.
You know, people are going to say the target's on our back, but I hope it's right in our forehead in between our eyes. I hope I can see the red dot.
Maybe the Texans have to get to the AFC Championship game for that to be the thing.
Yeah, I do think you have to beat the Chiefs in the playoffs and the Ravens, at least one of them. And, you know, you definitely have to beat the Chiefs before you can say, I hope to see the dot in between my eyes. Like, I think you have to accomplish just a little bit more before you can go that far.
And okay. CJ, you know, he's a good guy with the media. Good guy of the year, some would say.
That's true.
With the media.
He won good guy of the year thanks to the Pro Football Writers Association of America. It's his first, check that, it's his second trophy, Rookie of the Year last
year,
and good guy of the year.
To be fair, I think it's his third, because I think he also got one specifically from the Texans media.
That is true. He got one from the local chapter and the national chapter.
Yeah, he got recognized locally and nationally.
Correct.
So, you know, three trophies in his case.
He's good with the media. I don't know if he's quite a Joe Mazzulla, I want to see the bullet between, like, or I want to see the red dot. Like, I don't know if he has that. He doesn't get that aggressive normally. It's hard to do that and then follow it up with God bless.
Yes. Now, it was an up-and-down performance for Stroud. I say that because, yes, he had those incredible plays. He threw a pass on 4th and 2 from his knees.
Yeah. Yes,
he threw that on his knees.
Yes, he did.
You all know that Tom Brady's my Lord and Savior. I saw Tom Brady try to throw a pass on his ass once, and it got picked off.
I remember that play.
I do, too.
I remember that play.
Because not too long afterwards, a Dolphins fan threatened to strangle me with my own intestines at Pro Player Field because I was talking a lot of trash. And honestly, shouldn't have been talking that trash because the 1-13 Dolphins beat the 13-1 Patriots that game. It happens. But C.J. Stroud threw a pass from his knees for a first down. And he seemed so calm when he did it. And he had, we talked about it earlier, the throw on 3rd and 14 where he's rolling to his right and he throws it back across the middle of the field to Nico Collins. And on that last drive, that out route, that I don't know how he fit that into that tight window, throwing it to Collins for a first down that ultimately led to the Joe Mixon first down that clinched the game. But there were a couple of times he could have had interceptions.
Well, there's the one specifically that is the worst throw of – one of the worst throws we've ever seen C.J. Stroud make.
The attempt to throw it out of bounds.
Yes, where he failed to get out of bounds, and it was an interception except for like 3 inches of a guy's heel.
Yeah, I honestly disagree with the way that the NFL has created that rule. I feel like if 1 foot's down and the toe's down before the heel – I feel like it should count as a full foot. I guess per the NFL's letter of the law, that's not the case. That's what we learned yesterday.
Yeah, I would accept that, though.
So I disagree in principle there. And look, if you're going to throw the football out of bounds, you got to know you're going to be able to make it to the bench. Like, that's the way you should be looking at it. He lobbed that thing up. I mean, if there's a little bit less oomph on that, that's a pick six. You throw it up like that towards the sideline, you have a defender who's flying in there, he gets the ball, he's got all the forward momentum going.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy made a great catch there. That was terrible. That is now the worst throw he's ever made. The second worst is the pick six that he threw against the Bengals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
That one was a rough one.
Yeah, but that play was inexcusable. He knows that. I mean, but you're right. Just literally, dude, just fire it out of the field.
Yeah.
Just throw it as far as you can. Throw it to a fan in the stands. Mm-hmm. There was the other interception, which wasn't, I'd say, as egregious, that got wiped off by the penalty. That one, I think
there's holding on it.
Yeah, he knew there was a penalty, I think. Mm-hmm. So he was a little more reckless with the ball. That I'm always okay with. Like, if you've got a free play, you be as reckless as you absolutely want. Totally different than the previous interception.
I don't know if he knew he had the free play, but I agree with you in principle on that one. There was one more almost interception. It was a deep ball that he threw to Tank Dell. He had two underthrows on deep balls. One was to Nico Collins. One was to Tank Dell. That one should have been intercepted, too. I don't know what that Colt defensive back was doing. Bounced right off of his hand. So it was an up-and-down kind of performance for C.J. Stroud. And again, what I'm trying to establish here, now that there are actual expectations attached to the Houston Texans, is it's not going to be a sunshine and rainbow pom-pom party every single victory. They won by 2 points in a game where they easily could have lost, and I think they could have done better. they did some really good things there. Joe Mixon looked good. The run defense looked good. Nico Collins was good. Stephon Diggs was awesome in the red zone. And it's nice to see that he and Stroud continued that rapport that they have in the red zone. But we're trying to raise expectations here. And I felt like for C.J. Stroud, that was a C-minus game. We saw some spectacular, but there could have been more interceptions in that one. And the thing that I'm most frustrated with, Joe, is at the very end of the first half. I know everyone wants to blame it on the referees. And the referees did do a very poor job of communicating what the hell was happening there. But ultimately, the person who was on the field is in control of what happens there. And C.J. Stroud and the Texans should not have been lining up after the referee said there's 5 seconds left in the shotgun. And you could tell that Stroud realized he screwed up a second later, because then all of a sudden he started clapping his hands because he knew, oh, wait, damn it, what did I do? It's a learning experience. Luckily, it didn't cost him. But that, to me, that was the worst moment by Stroud. That could have cost him. It was 3 points.
Yeah, that whole sequence is confusing because there's a lot of blame to go around from the coaches to the refs to CJ. It does seem, because he took some accountability after the game, that it was communicated clearly to CJ that it was going to be a running clock. So that's where you're right. That's something that is really inexcusable. Even though he was only in his second year, to make that kind of a mistake, you just have to know to spike it in that moment. Now, your coach could have helped you, but you just have to know. And it's one of those weird things, too, Paul, where it's like, I would say he's never going to make it again. That play was so bizarre. I don't know if he'll ever be in that position ever again.
So let's try to walk through it here. Yeah. So Dalton Schultz catches a pass. They're not sure whether or not he caught it. The Texans line up on the ball and spike it. And they get the spike off, but apparently the whistle had been blown and the replay process had begun, and they were trying to determine whether or not Schultz caught it. Schultz did catch it with 15 seconds left, and what's supposed to happen after that is there's supposed to be a 10-second runoff, and then the clock starts again, and the Texans in that situation should have spiked the ball. Where it got complicated was after the review was done on the television broadcast, it seemed like Shane Steichen had called a timeout. But no official did this movement right here. I'm making a movement where my hands are going up and down. It sort of looks like I'm doing the top half of the YMCA. When the referees do that on the field, that means that the clock is stopping. No official did that. There was a whistle blown, but no official did that. If they had done that, then a timeout would have been called by the Colts. But they never called a timeout. And I know that no one really knew about it because I looked at the pool report afterwards. And Jonathan Alexander, maybe he forgot, but he never asked whether or not a timeout had been called there. So I think everybody watching the game due to the television broadcast thought that Shane Steichen had called a timeout. And maybe he called the attention of the referee by getting that, but a timeout was never actually called on the field. This was a screw-up by the referees. It 100% was. They should have clarified that, and they never did. They never cleaned it up. The ref apologized. I've never heard a referee apologize when delivering, you know, an update about what's going on, a clarification.
Yeah.
So there was screw up here, but C.J. Stroud, after that happened, the Texans have to adapt to it. You know, you can't cry about how the referees are doing it. You have to realize, hey, if there's 5 seconds left, there is only one thing that we can do. It's spike the ball. Hail Mary, that's going to take too much time. Moving the ball up 3 yards with a throw to an out route or something like that so that you get a couple extra yards, what's that going to do for you? You got Kymie Fairbairn who would hit 3 50-yard field goals today. You don't need to get any closer. You're just getting greedy here. What they should have done is lined up on the ball and spiked it. I don't know why they thought, especially after the referee said that there's 5 seconds left on the clock, that they could have done anything. Whether the clock was stopped or not, they should have spiked the ball there. And that's on C.J. Stroud because he's the guy that's on the field. I get like D'Amico Ryans is supposed to communicate, but if you're out there on a football field, the head coach doesn't really have that much say other than calling a timeout, which the Texans were out of in that moment.
I also just philosophically hate the idea of the little out route to Tank Dell with 5 seconds left. If you're going to do it, just go for a touchdown. Like if you're going to choose not to kick a field goal in that moment, go for the end zone. Like the idea
that
you're going to.
But don't.
No, I know.
Take the field goal.
But like, yes, just take the field goal. But if you're going to run a play, at least do something big with it.
There's also just some getting too cute with it of, well, what if he doesn't get out of bounds after he catches it and now the game's over? Or not the game's over. The half is over because you try to get 5 extra yards here for very little reason. Yeah, I think it was just a bad... I will say one thing, one bright side, and maybe it's easy because they did end up winning. but D'Amico Ryans in the halftime interview running off the field immediately was like, that's our bad. We could have been better there.
He did.
CJ Stroud took accountability after the game. You don't always hear that. I mean, a lot of times, like, it's very easy just to throw the ref under the bus because he literally apologized while giving a verdict, which, like you said, never happens. And it was pretty clearly that they either mismanaged or miscommunicated the last 15 seconds there. But I do like that the coach and the player there were on the same page of, like, nope, our bad. We'll keep it moving.
This is CJ Stroud after the game weighing in on it when he was asked about what was a very confusing moment for everybody watching the game.
Week one, everybody's rusty. So I'm rusty. Rusty is the whole, you know, I think the officials told us one thing, but, you know, we got another. And it's up to us to really make the situation right. It's my job, you know what I mean? So I got to be better right there. And that's something we can definitely learn from, you know what I mean? I definitely don't think it's the end of the world, but those points could have cost us, you know what I mean? So we definitely got to be better.
I agree. See, CJ Stroud's even saying it. All you people who are thinking I'm hating on the Texans today, that I'm being John McClain here, I'm just trying to raise our expectations, okay? I am the cake-eater football fan. I come from a long line of winning. I'm trying to adjust everyone's expectations now that you have a chosen one quarterback.
I think it's time to start viewing them like you view the Astros. We have high expectations.
Not quite Astros level.
I want to say that.
You expect the Astros to go to what, the ALCS this year?
Yes.
Half of the station predicts them to go to the Texans.
But if they go to the
that half over there, not this half.
Two-thirds of the show.
I don't know why I'm taking a victory lap for having them lose in the divisional round after week one.
Yeah, you sound like a twitcher right now who randomly hate the Texans. Look, I don't think you can go that far because the Astros going to the ALCS, that's almost like the minimum expectation, right?
Yeah, I guess it's a minimum versus the highest expectation.
Yeah, we get to say the first run of the playoffs starts then, which is fun because it makes people so angry, you know? And we think that if they make it there, that they'd have a chance to win the World Series. I think we're all skeptical that they would win the AFC Championship game, let alone make it to the Super Bowl and win it, you know? So I don't think we're quite there. But while we're on the Houston Astros, oh boy. Things might be figuring themselves out when it comes to the Astros playoff rotation, at least based off of what we saw yesterday. He's Joe. I'm Paul. It's Gallant and George. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Verlander badly needs strikeout, ground out, double play, something to get out of this inning, and this one is driven to left field. Alvarez going, he looks up. Smith has got it! A grand slam! Second home run! Seven RBI! And the
I don't think the broadcaster could have set up that moment any better. Because, Verlander could have used literally anything other than a grand slam. His night, last night, against the Arizona Diamondbacks, as the Astros do take 2 of 3 from a very good Diamondback team, but saw Verlander struggle the way that he did. 3 innings pitched, 8 hits, 8 earned runs on 75 pitches. His ERA in 4 starts since coming off of the injured list is 9.68. He has not allowed this many runs since joining the Houston Astros. The most he'd ever allowed was in 2017, 9 with Detroit. It was his shortest start since August 9th of 2018. His ERA nearly jumped a full point from 4.52 to 5.3, Joe George.
I'm struggling with this one, Paul. I'm struggling because I want to say it. I want to use the W word.
The W word. What do you mean the W word? We talking about winning?
Washed. I'm so close. He's bad. He's bad. You know, I was praying and hoping to go on Twitter last night and see Justin Verlander say after the game he's hurt. Instead, he said, "I feel great. just wasn't good. That's the worst thing you want to hear. Like, I was hoping he was going to say he was hurt because of how bad it was. He was just terrible again. I mean, when we had the Justin Verlander conversation, that was a good conversation, but even in the back of my mind, I'm like, maybe this is a little premature. But now, when you talk playoffs, I don't think there's a will Justin Verlander be in the rotation. It's why is he in the rotation in the playoffs at this point? He is terrible right now.
His last time out, I thought to myself, you know what? He's just working his way back from his neck/shoulder injury. And then Dana Brown of the Astros flagship said the same thing, and I started second-guessing myself because I felt like I was delivering propaganda. And then yesterday happens, and the Diamondbacks are a good team. You can't afford to have that happen. This offense does have some firepower. It's nice to see Kyle Tucker finally back. But, I mean, you're not going to be overcoming 8 earned runs from your starting pitcher in the first 3 innings. And while Yusei Kikuchi on Saturday was far from perfect, I mean, if we're making the choice right now, it's definitely for the 3-man theoretical Astros playoff rotation, assuming that they get to the 2 seed, which does seem also far-fetched right now. You're picking Kikuchi. It's not a debate right now. Can it change? Sure. We still have 20 games left or so. But, that was
I mean, Paul, he hasn't rough. Justin Verlander hasn't gotten out in the 6th inning of a baseball game since May 29th.
Oh, that's a while.
I mean, even before the injuries, he's only going 5 innings.
Jose Abreu was still here.
Yeah, like he is not going deep into baseball games. He's just not as effective as he used to be. And it's not even close. It's just he's laboring through everything to get the stuff that was, you know, in a jam to get out of it. I don't know what's going on or if he's just done.
I don't want to call him washed, but I mean, what can you call last night?
I'm one more away. I'm not there yet, but if he gives another less than 5 innings appearance where he gives up 4 or 5 plus earned runs, that's it.
I really wonder if the Astros have the balls to not put him in the playoff rotation, even if this is going on. And I heard Dell talking about this with Sean on the way in about, like, well, what are you going to do here? Are you going to give him another injury designation? I mean, that is the nice thing that he has going for him, is that he technically is fresh back from a neck/shoulder injury.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it does seem unlikely that this organization is going to tell a veteran, yeah, dude, F off.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's unserious then. Let me paint a picture, okay?
Paint it.
You're in a 5-game series.
Bob Ross over here.
Framber Valdez has a disastrous first start and loses. So you know your mental head case is on the rocks. You win your next 2 games, and you're up 2-1 in the series. And then washed Justin Verlander goes out there and gives up 8 earned runs in a playoff game. And then you have to go back to Framber for game 5, who just lost game 1 of a playoff series.
Look, you used to take this back to Framber. Framber was great on Friday.
I know he was, but I'm painting a very negative scenario
here.
It's
a very negative picture. This is like what goth kids doodle like, in their notebook.
You can't have him out there.
Frommer's like, what the hell did I
do?
Framber's
good. I'm
this
sorry,
guy
Framber.
Gave up 8 runs last
I'm
night.
Sorry, Framber.
Joe's always bringing it back to Framber.
Why am I the worst part of this?
Like, Joe just wants to be right because he wanted to trade
No. But like, he can't be out there. You cannot give him the ball in game
Verlander.
4, Justin Verlander, of a playoff series. It's a terrible decision.
Right, I'm with you right now. I don't see how you justify it.
The worst part about it is that this isn't part of like what he said post game. He physically feels great. Man, never better. He didn't say never better. But the first 2 games after his most recent IL stint, they're perfectly acceptable old man Justin Verlander performances. It is the fact that he's gotten worse As we've talked about, as Minister of Propaganda Paul Gallant has said that he's that Justin Verlander is just working himself into postseason shape. As that's happening, he's getting worse, not better.
I am at least glad that afterwards he said, though, I think he said effing atrocious.
Yes.
So he's aware. He said that. Because sometimes this makes my blood boil with pitchers when they have an absolute like doo-doo fest out there. And then they say, you know, I really felt like I pitched well. No. Yeah. No, you didn't.
I was really hitting my spots.
You were hitting the spots on the bat.
Pavin Smith was hitting hitting them, too.
Yeah, this is another nobody hitting three tanks in one game. Like...
Yeah.
What? Who names their kid Pavin?
Great question.
I thought it was Pavin, to be
whatever.
Honest. No. The highlight we said says Pavin, which is worse than Pavin.
Either way, what are we doing?
Yeah, because at least like Pavin, you could be like, well, like his dad's name is Gavin. His mom's name is Patricia. And they combined it. I don't know.
Oh, that's how people name kids.
I guess so.
Like combining names.
Well, it's better than Pavin.
It is better than Pavin. Anything's better. Like,
what is he? His dad's a construction worker?
Whoa. Why are we besmirching construction workers?
Well, like, how do you come up with the name Pavin?
Got it. Okay, took me a second.
Paul just thought it was a random shot.
I was like, whoa.
What, are you stupid? Like a construction worker? No, that's not what we're doing.
That's what I thought you were doing. He's Joe, I'm Paul. Sean Mapes behind the glass, 713-780-3776 to call it, to text it. I think everybody's in agreement here. Like, Verlander, let's see him on the injured list.
Thank God you did that during week one of NFL football.
I know,
Justin
right?
Verlander.
He did. You know, last night, I think it was poor Marine on Twitch was getting on us because we weren't talking about the Astros. Did you want us to talk about the Astros last night? Did you want us to say that Justin Verlander looks washed? Like, because he did. Anyway, up next, we'll continue to talk about the Texans, their victory 29-27 to open the season over the Indianapolis Colts, first place in the AFC South. What's your biggest week one overreaction? We'll deliver those next. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.